This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The governor of Texas, Rick Perry, has backed off his plan to make it mandatory for girls in Texas to get vaccinated with Gardasil. That's the new vaccine that's meant to protect against four strains of HPV, or human papillomavirus. Some types of HPV are known to cause cervical cancer, and there is evidence that the vaccine can prevent some infections and reduce cervical cancer rates. But recent reports on the vaccine's effectiveness have been confusing, and not everyone thinks vaccinating girls and young women is a good idea. Just this month, the New England Journal of Medicine recommended a cautious approach to vaccinating. Joining me now to help us sift through the issues is James Colgrove, author of State of Immunity, The Politics of Vaccination in 20th Century America. He is assistant professor of sociomedical sciences at the Mammon School of Public Health at Columbia University. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr.
Thank
Colgrove.
You.
It's confusion again.
It's been a very busy couple of months since we spoke last. Something new in the news almost every day.
Put this in perspective for us. Bring us up to date.
Well, the vaccine was licensed last June and caused a lot of excitement. It appeared to be very promising. It showed very strong efficacy against two of the most dangerous strains of HPV, which are responsible for most cases of cervical cancer. And there was immediately a lot of legislative activity to make the vaccine mandatory for girls before they entered middle school. The rationale for that was that the vaccine is most effective when given before a girl becomes sexually active. HPV, this virus, is very prevalent, and a woman's chances of becoming infected with it increase dramatically with each new sexual partner, and so the benefit that she's going to get from the vaccine decreases dramatically. So this was the rationale, that you wanted to make sure that girls got it before they became sexually active. The idea that you would give such a vaccine caused a lot of consternation among religious conservatives who believed, I think without evidence, that giving this vaccine would increase sexual risk-taking, mm-hmm. would encourage girls to become promiscuous. So the idea of passing these laws became very controversial.
Mm. We had a story last month in the Wall Street Journal that said, quote, Gardasil has been dogged about how effective it really is. Mm-hmm. There was that now a little brief bit that said, well, gee, you know, it's not working like we thought it would.
Well, it's been clear all along that the vaccine is really effective against these two strains before a woman becomes infected with them. There are two strains in particular that are especially dangerous, type 16 and 18. Mm-hmm. We have some new data now that give a clearer picture of that. And when you give the vaccine to a woman before she is infected with either of these strains, the vaccine is extremely effective. It's 98%, something very close to 100%. But when you look at the entire pool of women, including women who already have been infected with these two strains, the efficacy overall is only about 44%. And that number is really a lot more pertinent to the kinds of real-life situations in which the vaccine mm-hmm. will be given. Because when you take a vaccine and you give it to the general public, you're going to be giving it to young women who have not been infected with the strains, but also who have been infected because, as I said, HPV is an extremely prevalent prevalent virus.
Mm-hmm. Part of the confusion is also over how young girls should be mm-hmm. vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem to be, according to the reports you read, mm-hmm. as much data about young girls as there is mm-hmm. about girls 15 year old.
Right. Most of the studies have involved older young women. I think the median mm-hmm. age in one of the trials was about 20. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, there is this question about how young, but then there are also questions about how up to what older age the vaccine should be given because of this issue mm-hmm. that the older a woman gets, the more likely she is to already be infected with one of these strains, and so the vaccine won't do her much good. So, for example, last year the CDC recommended that the vaccine be given to girls from 11 to 26, mm-hmm. knowing that the older, the upper age bracket might not get much benefit from it. The American Cancer Society, on the other hand, looked at the same data and recommended the vaccine only for girls from 11 to 18. and not for girls 19 through 26. And they said, look, we just, based on this data, we just don't think that young women 19 through 26 are going to derive any benefit from this because it's so likely that they are already infected with one of these strains. And in fact, this new data suggests that that's probably an appropriate recommendation.
Mm-hmm. According to the article, and going back to the New England Journal of Medicine, where they point out that two strains, as you did, 16 and 18, account for the lion's share of oncogenesis. Mm-hmm. That leaves the other strain, mm-hmm. possibly,
right.
To take over, maybe?
Right. There is a suggestion that if you block the activity of the two strains, then other strains will enter. And it's not really known what's the contribution of these other strains to the incidence of cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm. And so the states now mm-hmm. are left to wrestle with the state mm-hmm. by state.
Right. There's a tremendous amount of activity, legislative activity around the country. 24 states have some kind of legislation pending to make the vaccine mandatory for entry to middle school. There's also, I should mention, a lot of other kinds of legislation having to do with the financing of the vaccine. This is a very expensive vaccine. It costs about $360 for a full course of 3 doses. And there are real questions about how parents will pay for it. Many private insurers don't cover it yet, at least. So some of this legislation at the state level has to do with things like laws that would require private insurers to cover the vaccine, laws that would allocate state funds to help pay for the vaccine. But the most controversial legislation has been these laws pertaining to making it mandatory. And around the beginning of the year, there seemed to be a lot of momentum in favor of these laws. That momentum has really slowed, I think, as more people have raised questions about various aspects, about the timing of it, about the role of Merck, who was lobbying very aggressively for the passage of these laws. I think Merck really shot themselves in the foot in a way by being so aggressive and creating it really was a conflict of interest and certainly looked bad for them. So Texas was the first state. The legislature has now overridden that. Currently, only one state, Virginia, has made the vaccine mandatory for middle school entry. The law includes an opt-out provision that makes it very easy for any parent who objects to exempt their daughter from the recommendation. It's dangerous to speculate, but I would guess that we probably won't be seeing most of this legislation go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. There's also a new study that links HPV with oral cancers now. Tell us about that.
Well, HPV has been linked to a wide variety of health problems, various kinds of anogenital cancers, genital warts, anal cancers and penile cancers in men as well. So there's just a lot that is still not known about exactly what will be the public health impact of this vaccine.
1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two. And Tom in Minneapolis. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Glad to be on. I'd like to point out that decision-making when you're looking at public policy is very different than decision-making for an individual. And the reason I bring this up is that for a young woman who's already sexually active, say in her early 20s, it might make sense that if there's a chance of benefit from being vaccinated, it might make sense to go ahead and pursue that. Whereas at a public policy level, the benefit, might not be as clear for recommending that whole age group be vaccinated. And I think that's an important distinction for individuals who are hearing the show and trying to decide what to do.
Jim?
Right. I think the caller raises a very good point. The decision-making with any vaccination program is a very complicated calculus of risks and benefits, and that calculus is not the same for an individual as it is for a population. So, you might make a recommendation for a certain age group. That doesn't necessarily mean that every single person in that age group will want to follow that recommendation.
And so you're left again with a caution, with a little red flag up, mm-hmm. and you have to decide for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
your family.
Right. I think, and, you know, this is an obstacle that public health officials confront all the time, is how to proceed in the face of scientific uncertainty. I mean, answers in science are rarely as clear-cut as you would like them to be. You know, I think that's why there was a lot of people in the public health community who, in general, are very supportive of vaccines and supportive of vaccine mandates for diseases like measles and polio, are saying that it's really too early to be mandating HPV because there are simply too many unanswered questions about it. And the fear is that by moving forward very aggressively, they were undermining public trust and really risking a backlash against the broader immunization system that, you know, that keeps childhood diseases under control. Mm-hmm. You have to maintain the trust of the public or you've lost everything in public health.
Well, do we need more time to see if it's effective or time to decide what the pros and cons are?
I think both of those things. I mean, studies will be ongoing for many years, and we'll see in the coming months and years additional information about how effective it is, what's the duration of the protection, are there any additional side effects that we haven't seen so far.
What about men? What about vaccinating men?
Exactly. Should the vaccine be given to boys and men? Merck is looking at its Merck has safety data on young men, but they haven't yet released their efficacy data. They're looking at that now and are expected to release it soon. So if and when that happens, that will be yet another policy question that we'll have to look at.
And what if you don't need three booster shots?
Right, exactly. One thing to consider, since it is so expensive, and also since the more shots you have to go back for, the less likely it is that you're going to complete the entire series. If in fact you can get an effective dose of immunity from two shots, then obviously that would be greatly preferable to having to take three shots.
You know, it's one of these things where we can't give you a yes or no answer.
It's unfortunate. Yeah. People, I think, look to their public health leaders to provide these kinds of answers, and unfortunately they're rarely available.
James Colgrove, thank you.
Thank
for
you.
Taking time to be with us. James Colgrove is the author of State of Immunity, The Politics of Vaccination in 20th Century America. He's also Assistant Professor of Sociomedical Sciences at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about stuff you people have been asking us to talk about, these light bulbs. What about those, you know, energy-efficient, curly little fluorescent light bulbs? Should I change over? Is there anything better? We'll talk with someone who's on the cutting edge of research on that. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.